Hello and welcome back. I'm Dandy Zhu, your host, and you're listening to Digital Health Forward, a podcast dedicated to sharing the stories of healthcare entrepreneurs, leaders, and executives who are moving the digital health industry forward. Today, I had the chance to chat with Matt Miller, Managing Director of the United Healthcare TechStars Accelerator. The Accelerator is focused on healthcare innovations that support payer and care provider efforts, with an emphasis on digital health and wellness solutions. TechStars has a worldwide network of entrepreneurs, including more than 10,000 mentors, 10,000 investors, 1,600 alumni companies, and over 200 staff members. On average, historically, TechStar companies go on to raise more than $2 million of outside capital after the program. In our conversation today, Matt shares stories and insights from his diverse experiences as a startup founder, behavioral scientist, investor, and mental health professional. We learn about the UHG TechStars program, what exactly happens during the 3 months, what support and resources you receive as a startup founder in the program, and what the application process looks like. We end our conversation with Matt's reflections on entrepreneurship and innovation in digital health. We hope you enjoy the conversation. Hey, Matt, it's great to have a fellow Minnesotan on the show today.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us and taking time, especially with a newborn recently, right?
Yeah, he's almost one now. So we're into the toddler phase almost, but life is busy, and in the midst of it, happy to be here.
Great. Well, I'm very excited to learn more about your journey through healthcare and what you're up to leading the TechStars UHG Accelerator. So to start, would love if you could share a little bit more about your background and what you've been up to in the healthcare world.
Yeah, totally. I'm going to be fully transparent with you in that my background isn't linear, right? So for any of those folks that have like a really clear biography that goes point A to point B to point C in an intuitive fashion, that's not my journey. I spent several years as a wilderness guide. I went to seminary. I worked as a kindergarten teacher. I did a number of different things before finding my niche in healthcare. Mm-hmm. The specific avenue that I ended up focusing on was mental and emotional well-being. I studied psychology. I became a licensed mental health professional. And then I did a PhD in behavior science, where I focused on building digital interventions to improve health behavior and health outcomes. And it was after grad school that I started building companies. I built a few startups in the health tech space. One was focused on immediate incentives for employees that were completing health behaviors. And then one was more of a spin on traditional talk therapy and natural environments with a text-to-therapist subscription component. And both of those went moderately well, but eventually stalled. I realized that I'm probably not a world-class operator. And so my career took another tangent, and I ended up tackling behavior science and behavioral health initiatives for companies of various sizes, which is mm-hmm. something that I've done over the past 7 years or so before getting into investing.
Yeah. And tell us a little bit more about what that looked like, leading behavior science groups within larger companies.
Yeah, sure. So the gig was all about generation of research and strategy for product development, along with, you know, ways to design product testing to ensure that there was an efficacy associated with what we were offering the world. So I led teams that undertook literature reviews. We wrote white papers. We wrote peer-reviewed publications. We completed analyses of a competitive landscape relative to what science would say is the best practice in a particular space. And then from that information, we tried to distill it down in a way where we were able to write user stories for product managers. And then we would collaborate with engineering teams and data science teams to ensure the optimization of the tool based on real-world evidence.
Got it. And I imagine there's a lot of thoughtfulness that probably needs to go into bridging that gap between, you know, the academic world of peer-reviewed publications with lots of data and methods and conclusions and discussion parts and all that to actually, you know, writing user stories. But tell what is that like? Like, how does that work in practice?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I'm a nerd. So I think like being a nerd and being insatiably curious, like intellectually curious in this space, is something that's really a priority for being able to bridge that gap between academia and industry. Mm-hmm. Academia really taught me to be a critical thinker, to be sort of an insatiable consumer of literature and research. You know, to have an understanding of study design is pretty critical. And then to, I think truthfully, to be to be focused on expanding the edge of knowledge was something that has really served me well. And I think like the transition between those environments is tricky from cultural norms and social norms perspectives, but realistically, like the rest of those things that we just referenced, they have a high degree of transferability and like a high degree of value and respect that they receive within the business environment. So it's, even though it's abrupt, it's not as bumpy as it may seem.
Yeah. And just to help us visualize this more, can you give us an example perhaps of something that was an insight from the research your team was doing at a company and then how that actually translates into a product feature?
Yeah, certainly. Well, I'm actually going to generalize it. So maybe you may need to make me zoom in again. So when you are, let's say we're building an app and it's in the digital health space and it's for a particular patient population with a particular diagnosis, there's a way to go about that from a UX UI standpoint, right? To make sure that the thing you build, like people will actually use and people understand, you know, and they're able to intuit it appropriately. There's also a way to go about it from the scientific standpoint, meaning like, what are the actual experiences in the event or in the app that the user is being pushed through that correlate with the evidence around best practice in the space? So the academic framing for something like that would be a behavior change technique, a BCT. There's a researcher out of the University College London named Susan Meakey, who's probably like the most world-class person in this space that I could think of. So if any of your listeners are curious about evidence-based behavior science interventions and behavior change techniques, like she's the godfather, she's the stud when it comes to all of these things. And she's actually categorized a whole taxonomy and ontology of behavior change techniques and what these types of techniques do when it comes to moving modifiable determinants within a user. Mm-hmm. So if you do X and it shifts Y in you as a user, does that predispose you to Z behavior? So you do a goal setting exercise and it increases your sense of motivation to adhere to your nutritional program, which then leads to higher outcomes over time, right? Something like that, where then you can actually put together a category of all of these different types of experiences that you want to make sure you incorporate into an app for a particular patient population to make sure they're actually set up for success. And all of that really rests on, you know, what does the evidence say? So that was the type of work that we would do hand in hand with the product teams.
Very cool. Great. Well, shifting gears a little bit, would love to hear a bit more also about how you became an angel investor and an advisor to digital health companies and what that has been like.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, like I mentioned previously, I've really always had a passion for problem solving, you know, being curious, thinking about what else is possible. And truthfully, I've always romanticized the startup space more broadly. So it's come pretty naturally to me that I pay really close attention to what's happening within early healthcare innovation. And this, you know, it just served me well, particularly when I was at Johnson & Johnson. I got the opportunity to look into early stage health technology opportunities on their behalf. So meeting with, vetting and diligencing startups for prospective partnership or investment or acquisition or otherwise. And it was during this period that I came across a number of companies doing things that were important for the world, that felt like they were good for humanity, but also capable of producing venture returns. Mm-hmm. And they were run by people that I admired. So I just blindly started angel investing. It was not more strategic than that. The first checks were really, really tiny. And you know, truthfully, my checks are still really humble in size. But the founders let me join because I was genuinely excited about it and I was willing to help. And I found this process of supporting early entrepreneurs to be a really compelling one. And for me personally, just to be a very fulfilling use of capital. So I continued this type of effort after I left J&J. I joined a population health management company called Staywell and, you know, did the same kind of thing there, but also built an understanding of the broader market landscape, investment opportunities across more of healthcare, which eventually led me to Techstars.
Great. I want to jump into Techstars in just a little bit, but I'm curious when it comes to investing and advising, if there's like a specific niche of digital health that you focus on and feel like you can, you know, you have the most connections or you understand the best.
Yeah. you know, I'm probably not world class at anything there, truthfully. I'm a licensed mental health professional. So things in that mental health, behavioral health space are pretty second nature to me, both in terms of making connections for advancement or BD efforts or otherwise, but then also an understanding of data to have an interpretation of the efficacy of mm-hmm. whatever your stuff is, and also an understanding of product features and capabilities to, you know, build a roadmap. So in those areas, I have a few things to offer. I would say outside of that, you know, we focused a fair amount over the past couple of years on innovative care delivery models and built a pretty strong network, both of connections into health systems, connections into payers that are interested in those types of innovations, and then also connections to later stage investors that are willing to capitalize those models once they've hit a growth stage. And so I think like the combination there affords me, you know, the opportunity to really transfer values into companies like that as well.
Got it. That all makes sense. Well, want to talk more now about the accelerator that you were the managing director for. So share with us a bit more context about the organization, how it started, and the rationale behind the United Healthcare Group and Techstars.
Yeah, happy to. So Techstars, I imagine a portion of your listeners are familiar, but like just to level set everyone. So Techstars is a global network for investment in innovation. They are, I think at this point, they're the largest seed stage investor in the world. And for me, I think they're the only investment company I'm aware of that's actually structured as a public benefit corporation, which I just love, right? They give away a portion of their proceeds. It's very philanthropic. It's very give first in nature from an employee culture standpoint. So it's a lovely place to be affiliated with. We started in Boulder, Colorado, 13 years ago. We're now active in 160 countries. So this thing has kind of spread like wildfire, particularly over the past 5 years or so.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's a pretty big thing at this point. And at Techstars, we offer a number of different programmatic opportunities for entrepreneurs. So we've got startup weeks and startup weekends. These are common events at cities around the globe. And then we have our accelerator programs, which is, you know, it's probably what we're best known for. And one of the types of accelerators that we offer is a vertically oriented program that's run in partnership with a corporation. So this is the version that I run with United Healthcare. So UHC, I imagine just about everybody on this call is familiar with United, but UHC is the largest insurance company in the US. They're part of UHG, United Health Group, which is one of the biggest health companies in the world, which also includes Optum, right? And Optum is the largest provider of healthcare services and health IT solutions. So like, suffice it to say, they're a giant in the healthcare space. And interestingly, despite having an incredibly large internal innovation budget, they are also passionate about finding ways to connect with external innovators and entrepreneurs. In fact, several of the executives within UHC have actually been volunteer mentors in other Techstars accelerators previously. So they were familiar with the Techstars model. They were familiar with the value prop it could offer both founders and them as a corporate partner. And that was really the genesis of our program. The value prop to UHC is really having access to world-class entrepreneurs that are doing innovative things in the healthcare market that happen to overlap with strategic priorities of their business. So for United, it's a way to, and it's an expedited way to build relationships with entrepreneurs working on the health system of tomorrow and to quickly experiment with new technologies to see what's possible. And on the founder side, it's awesome, right? It really provides unprecedented access to the leadership, strategy, operations, like the inner workings of the biggest health company in the US.
Yeah, it seems very symbiotic. And it seems like it was an organic sort of evolution from the mentorship that a lot of these executives were already providing to Techstars. But in terms of the focus, you mentioned, you know, there needs to be some alignment with the strategic priorities of UHC. Are there specific areas of digital health and healthcare innovation that the accelerator really focuses in on?
There are, although it's going to sound like pretty broad strokes when I describe it. And part of it is because United Healthcare and then United Health Group is just massive.
Right.
And so like the areas of interest for them as a company like really span the gamut of healthcare. So we are looking for technology companies that improve the quality of care, that increase access to care, optimize outcomes of care, reduce gaps in care, manage the cost of care, technologies that enhance the overall patient experience of receiving care, So that is that's a pretty large aperture. All of those are in scope for us, and all of those overlap with pretty massive strategic priorities of pretty right. massive business lines within United as an entity.
Yeah. I mean, in a way it's really anything. It sounds like that improves the value of care,
yes.
Plus the patient experience. And it's probably good to keep it broad because innovation it's so unpredictable, right? Like what people are going to think of. And I imagine you don't want to restrict who applies if you have too narrow of a scope as well.
Totally agreed. Yeah. And truly, like, a portion of the rationale for this program is a philosophy that many of the solutions to the existing problems in healthcare are going to come from people that look differently mm-hmm. and think differently and have had different lived experiences, and potentially people that don't actually have any business being in healthcare themselves. And so instead of thinking that all of the solutions to the current issues are going to come from, you know, internal executives that are already a part of the system and already really steeped in protocol, policy, regulatory rules, et cetera, like really trying to widen the lens to ensure that anyone who's passionate about this in really mm-hmm. any capacity has a level playing field to get access to what we're offering. That's the intent.
And for those who aren't as familiar with accelerators as a concept, can you mm-hmm. tell us more about sort of the pros and cons of joining one versus, say, raising money on your own or through an angel investor or VC?
I am so biased to answer that question.
So, that's okay, though. Yeah, I want the full perspective. So
no spin zone. Exactly. Yeah. So for all of the companies that we're working with, it's not one or the other. Mm. Right? They're not only doing an accelerator at the expense of never raising venture, or they're not skipping an accelerator. Most of the companies that we collaborate with, they see benefits from both of those, right? There's a space for raising money on your own, whether that's bootstrapped family and friends, angels, institutional or otherwise. There's a space for finding, you know, non-dilutive sources of capital for many of the companies that we're collaborating with. You know, there's pretty massive pools of grant funding from SBIR, NSF or NIH, et cetera. And then there's really a place for the accelerator. The accelerator comes with like a pretty meager capital relative to some of those other entities. And it's less about the money and more about the broader value transfer, where in our capacity, we provide companies that participate in our program with an unfair competitive advantage. They have curated access to the decision makers from across the healthcare landscape to have an insider understanding of what's happening and how systems work and places where innovation is possible or not. And then pricing models that could be associated with those types of innovations to ensure that they, you know, they kind of have all the answers to the test before they fully build out their business. So for companies that are early and on the journey that are building in highly regulated spaces like healthcare, an accelerator program with deep connections into that industry is kind of a no-brainer.
Right.
In the midst of saying that, like, you should probably also find grant funding and angel funding and probably talk to venture at some point as well, if that's mm-hmm. appropriate with your business model. So for me, it's very much a both and versus either or.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that, I feel like that mentorship, the advice you get from people who really know the healthcare industry is so helpful, especially because, I mean, the industry is just so complex. And if you're bringing in people who might be outsiders, but who have really interesting ways of looking at a problem, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, it's just so complementary, and to be able to fail fast and iterate as quickly as possible to come to a viable business yeah. model, perhaps, sounds like a huge value proposition coming out of the accelerator.
Totally. Totally. And one other comment there, and this is like sort of a brash generalization, so forgive me, but I look at a lot of companies in healthcare, particularly early companies. So pre-seed, seed, series A companies that are doing things in health tech. It feels like a lot of them have wasted the first 20 to 30% of their cap table wandering from thing to thing to thing, trying to figure out who pays for what they have. Like, how do they know it works? And once they know it works, does it actually solve a problem that somebody will pay for? And so really what we're trying to do, even though we take equity in exchange for our experience, what we're trying to do is be protective of founders and help expedite their process through that like learning chasm to get them on the other side quicker.
Mm. Yeah. And so tactically speaking, what actually happens during the 3-month program? What is, how does that learning chasm get crossed?
Oh man. Yeah. So it is. so our program is 14 weeks long.
Okay.
It is, it's divided into three broad buckets, I would say. Like, let's just call them months one, two, and three. So in month one is meeting the stakeholders. So we've got a giant pool of people that are executives from across the healthcare industry, and then a series of people, dozens and dozens and dozens at this point, of senior executives from across United's lines of business who have all agreed to be volunteer mentors for the companies that participate. And we do this thing called Mentor Madness, where you as a founder, if you're participating, you meet these executives back to back to back to back to back for a half day every day for several weeks on end, pitching your business, getting their feedback, you know, getting mentor whiplash as one tells you one thing and one tells you another thing.
Right.
But like meeting people, making relations, getting introductions, getting extra meetings, getting extra connections as a way to really expedite your learnings, your understanding of your problem solution story. And then your interpretation of, hey, based on their results, what should you be doing next? That's really month one. Month two for most of the companies in the program is build, build, build. Like they've actually got insights that what they came into the program with in terms of a product or capability standpoint, it's not fully viable in its current form. And so they're heads down, really trying to get to work to get this thing to a position where it's commercializable relative to the knowledge that they've just been, you know, passed from all these different executives. You are on a weekly basis interacting with a core group of mentors who've been assigned to your company at this point, who are executives from across the healthcare industry who have been tasked with making sure that you're successful. So you've got all this insight from the broader pool. You've got all this strategy in terms of products, capabilities. You've got some sort of strategy with go-to-market. And then you've got a group of senior executives that are seasoned, that are well-connected in the healthcare space, who are holding your hand, making sure you get stuff done. And then month three is at a certain point, come up for air and figure out what your launch story is. Like if we're going to have a demo day at the end of this, and we're going to put you on stage in front of a ton of people, healthcare executives and investors alike, like what's the story you want the world to hear about your business? What are the things that you want to have achieved at that point that you can brag about? And then what's the direction that you're headed? And how can we frame it in a way where it's compelling to stakeholders, to prospective customers, to prospective venture partners, et cetera, so that by the end of this program, you can feel like you've got all the momentum in the world. That's what we're up to.
A few follow-ups to that. So month one, for the executives that they meet with, are they mostly from UHC or are they sort of all over the industry?
All over. So we've got a critical mass of folks from United specifically. This program is run in partnership with them, and they are, you know, they're truly a partner in every sense of the word. So they're really deeply involved. And at the same point in time, you know, we've got executives that have built health tech companies that are the CEOs of health systems, that are from med tech and med device and pharma and life science, like really from across the broader healthcare system that participate in this. And so there's a wealth of knowledge that's able to be gleaned from interacting with all those folks.
Right. And then month two, it sounds like you're pushing them to build some sort of like prototype. Is that right?
So most companies that come into our program have already built a product in advance.
Okay.
I would say that's kind of a rule for us. You know, rules are broken all the time in venture. So, you know, for the right team and the right vision, we break all sorts of rules. But for the most part, the archetype for us is there's a team with a product in market pre-program. So you've already come up with an idea. You've already built it. You've already deployed it in some capacity, and you already have a sense that it works.
I see.
And at the same point in time, it's likely not its final, fully evolved self. It likely has a few additional iterations that it needs to go through before it's ready for large-scale commercialization, particularly given like the distribution channels that you have access to through this program. And so for many teams, it's not necessarily that they're cranking out a prototype month two, but they're adding the necessary features to ensure that their thing floats so that they can go prime time, so to speak.
Right. And then what is demo day like? People who've never experienced it.
Yeah. demo day is, there are a couple of different perspectives on it. It's a bit of a forcing function for these founders, truthfully, right? To like have this kind of arbitrarily imposed end date at the end of program where, hey, you need to have something impressive to say, because we're going to put you on stage. What's your story? Mm-hmm. So for a lot of founders, it kind of lights a fire under them to really execute and get more done than they would have expected. But the broader function of Demo Day is twofold. It's to celebrate the accomplishments of these founders, because most people, they just work relentlessly to achieve what they're capable of achieving during our program. They make a lot of sacrifices to do it. And so we want to get them on stage and celebrate that. And then the second one, in more material terms, is that we want to make sure this company is predisposed to be successful. Mm-hmm. So Demo Day is all about getting visibility in front of prospective customers and prospective investors. So there are a host of executives from across the healthcare landscape that are invited. And then there's a critical mass of early health technology investors that also attend, all of whom want a sneak peek at who's involved, you know, what is their technology, what problem does it solve, how good is it, how big are they going to be? And so ideally, it is the appropriate stage, like the appropriate avenue for companies to have a spotlight on them, to expedite conversations with all of those parties, so that when the program is over, it doesn't feel like, you know, like all the momentum just stops, that they actually, like they're on a trajectory at that point.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like a perfect transition to, you know, going to market in those new channels with the new prospective customers, and then hopefully also attracting those investors for follow-on rounds, right?
Totally. Totally.
And what does the engagement between Techstars and those founders look like after they graduate?
Yeah. So when you are a part of a Techstars program, you are Techstars for life. Techstars has resources, benefits, the broader Techstars network, regular events, investor events, BD events, et cetera, that we host on an ongoing basis. And once you're an alumni of any one of our programs, you're invited to all of those things, really for the life of your company. With this in particular, there are ongoing meetings that we continue to have as a cohort. So this class of digital health companies, in addition to our broader portfolio of digital health or health tech investments, we have pretty regular healthcare symposiums with those companies and then invited guests. And then on a fairly regular basis, we do ongoing events with alumni from these programs and people from United. So it's not nearly to the intensity that it was during the program. The program is really a, hey, there's something going that's really materially important just about every single day. And it's kind of like overload. The pace mellows certainly post demo day, but our goal is to be in relationship with these founders for the life of their company. Mm-hmm. And so we've got really, really great ongoing engagements and networking opportunities for them moving forward.
Got it. And how many startups are accepted each calendar year? Is it once a year? It's 3 months or?
Yeah. It's just once a year. So we run this program every year in the fall and we only take 10 companies.
Okay.
Which is tricky because there's many more than 10 that are actually worthy of a spot. And so we unfortunately have to say no to companies that are brilliant. But it's just the reality of it. And part of that is because of the Techstars model, where there are a host of other accelerators at this point. It's kind of a commoditized function. And many of them are awesome, like legitimately really great offerings. What makes Techstars unique is that we don't expand our class size. We keep it really small so that the offerings can be bespoke and personalized. We don't offer like curated canned content. This is very much a let's pick the right companies, a small group of them, and keep that group small enough that we can know all of them. And then we can personalize all of the offerings, mentorship, workshops, et cetera, to make sure that it really meets their needs. So for us to be able to do justice to that as a mission, we need to keep our class size pretty small. So it's one program a year, 10 companies per program every year based in the fall.
That's fantastic. And given how many companies I'm sure you've seen and reviewed through the application processes too, are there any interesting trends or things that you've realized sort of at a broader scale in terms of early stage digital health innovation right now?
Oh man, that is such a big question. I wish I had a really articulate answer for you. Okay, one thing, let me try and ramble on it and see if we can get some semblance of value out of this. One of the things that we are finding that's unique now that certainly was not the case in years past is that companies, nascent companies, like small, scrappy companies that are tech savvy, that have picked a narrow enough niche, are able to put themselves in a really radical position of power with regards to the data that they capture. Where we are seeing companies where they're a team of like two or three or four, but they have the world's largest structured data set when it comes to X, you know, some small, narrow something.
Yeah.
And they're coming up with all sorts of creative ways to put that to work, to make the health system work better for everyone, to monetize it, to have a viable business, you know, et cetera. So that is, it's actually one of the areas where we immediately pay close attention when we meet a team and we realize like, oh, they have novel proprietary structured data affiliated with something unique in the healthcare space. Even if it feels initially, if it feels like, is that too narrow? I think there are opportunities there to like one, have a really meaningful impact, particularly if it's a patient population that experiences like really problematic or troubling care experiences currently. But then two, thinking about how you land and expand that model once you've built that data set into something where it's got material value that it can offer the world, like where you can go from there. Mm-hmm. Many of the companies that we've seen pursue that model, they just expedite their growth. And they're like, I don't even know how to say it without like sounding like I'm just sort of flaunting adjectives, but they're brilliant. There are several teams from our last class that all had the world's largest structured data set in their respective area.
Wow.
And they are so far ahead of their years in terms of in like actual founder experience, where they will build big businesses very quickly. And, you know, something that for, on our standpoint, there's not only a really clear value transfer there to United and to Techstars, but it's also just a privilege to work with teams like that because of their ability to make a difference in the healthcare system.
Hmm. That is so interesting. I didn't think about, you know, the data being the strategic asset to start with. But that makes a lot of sense in terms of if you can create the applications and the use cases for it, it becomes very defensible, right? Because you have such scale of the data.
At a certain point, like the flywheel is spinning and like you're uncatchable.
Yeah.
And that's compelling.
Right. What are some of those applications or use cases of the data that you've seen become really successful?
So most of the companies that I'm thinking of currently, and I want to toot a few of their horns, so to speak, that's probably not the right way to say it, but you know what I mean. they're still early in their journey. So success doesn't necessarily mean that they, you know, they've raised $100 billion or IPO'd or something, but like
gaining traction.
Companies that have a data set that they're putting into work. Yeah. And they're actually able to gain traction. One from our past class is a company called Dieta. That is it's a digestive health solution that uses a computer vision application to help patients with uncontrolled IBS. So if you're a patient with IBS, life is complicated and care is not linear, and it's a diagnosis of exclusion versus inclusion. And so like the patient experience kind of sucks, and you're sort of left on your own to just experiment with all sorts of things that may or may not help you manage your symptoms. So this company built a, and like, forgive me, because this may not be appetizing to some of your listeners, but they built a computer vision solution that does a proprietary analysis of stool.
Huh.
So you take pictures of your poop and it analyzes those and then provides all sorts of interesting recommendations for you to manage your symptoms over time. And then it can escalate you into appropriate care settings as needed if your symptoms exacerbate. But the idea is really like, let's empower the patients. Let's put their data to work in a novel way that the current care delivery system isn't capable of addressing.
Yeah.
And in doing so, they have built the world's largest structured data set of poop images. And the thought is massive, right? Near term, the thought is like, well, what do you do with that? But the thought is very much like, it is not too far in the distant future where you will be able to take a picture of your stool and have a better understanding of certain risks for cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's profound, right?
So that is.
Things like that, where they, you know, they started in a particular spot. And truthfully, this company started there because the founder was a data scientist at Uber and had his own IBS journey that was uncontrolled, that was impairing his quality of life. And so he stepped away from his work to solve the problem for himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just, you know, started with a personal mission, and he immediately realized that like, if he could make it work, he would be onto something.
Right.
And it would not only benefit like that near-term group of patients that were suffering, but like there were also potential expansion opportunities into adjacent diagnoses.
Wow. That is so interesting. I'm excited to see where they go. For the other companies in the accelerator that are not starting with like a data set, are they mostly working on developing a software solution for like hospitals or payers, or what other types of companies, I guess, or archetypes do you usually see?
Yeah, most of the companies that come through have a vision to sell their solution, capability, product, whatever it may be, into the payers.
Okay.
So if you're exclusively selling into health systems and you don't have a longer term vision of a way to partner with a payer, there's potential that our ability to like really give you an unfair competitive advantage is compromised.
Mm-hmm.
Because like we're really looking for things that have an intended vision in the future of payer as customer or partner. What those companies actually look like, it's tricky because there's not a clear archetype. A lot of them are software, enterprise SaaS that are doing interesting things when it comes to some of the back end stuff, like the operational efficiency stuff that exists within healthcare to make the system work smoother.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are care delivery, but they're technology enabled care delivery, and they're going after particular patient populations or employee bases. We've got a host of companies that we haven't invested in and companies that we are interested in investing in that are in like the broader health equity space or social determinants of health space.
Mm-hmm.
Innovation when it comes to Medicare and Medicaid populations and dual eligible populations to ensure that those folks have the care they need when they need it.
Mm-hmm.
From a technology standpoint is definitely of interest to us. So kind of across the board, some of it's enterprise SaaS. Some of these companies actually have, you know, clinical practices internally where they've got a corporate practice of medicine and they have to stand up separate companies to manage that. Others are just technology. Some of it's patient facing, some of it's provider facing. Some of the stuff we're into is actually potentially more akin to like a clinical decision support tool, but doesn't just only exist in health systems, you know, has a role to play in a partnership with a payer. So across all of those categories, I feel like I'm rambling at you a little bit, but it's just because our aperture is large for the things that are of interest, right? It's a big opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, that's exciting. You just see the breadth and the shared theme of having a payer as a potential end customer.
Yeah.
I want to shift to the last part of our interview around parting reflections. So one question we always ask is around the long-term vision for the company. So for the accelerator, you know, what is the long-term vision? What do you hope to accomplish? What's the impact you guys hope to have?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. So really the goal for us is sort of twofold. On the United Healthcare side, so the goal is to help UHC get exposure to innovative startups doing important work in healthcare. So we'll continue to check in to make sure we are delivering value to UHC in this capacity. And then the second goal, and for me, actually, the more important one is really to do a service to these founders and making sure that we're giving them that unfair competitive advantage that we promised and setting them up for success. So we'll continue to monitor previous classes to ensure that companies that are coming out of our program are set up for success and are actually delivering meaningful results. And ideally, they're delivering venture returns over time.
Mm-hmm.
And assuming we can check both of those boxes, we'll persist and we'll continue on this mission to give digital health entrepreneurs curated access in a way that gives them this profound advantage while also serving a corporate partner's innovation agenda.
Wonderful. And as you reflect on your journey more broadly, before the accelerator and now, what are some of the biggest lessons you've learned that you'd like to impart on our listeners when it comes to innovation and entrepreneurship in healthcare?
Sure. Yeah. You know, this is probably going to sound cliche, so hopefully there's some value for someone out there, but like persistence is the name of the game. Like, don't be in this to simply make a buck, right? There are mm-hmm. better industries to target if you want to get rich quick. Healthcare is complicated enough, it's regulated enough, it's slow enough that persistence is really required for anyone to have the staying power to actually see it through and to make the impact they want. You know, we had talked about companies wasting the first 20 to 30% of their cap table wandering around. And so it really just takes persistence to find that product market fit. And if possible, I would really encourage people to delay taking venture financing as long as possible, to keep the company lean, to keep it hungry until you're really on to something and really in a position to put that capital to work to meaningfully grow the business. I think outside of that, one of the things that sort of hurts my heart is that it seems like most digital health startups, even ones that are building brilliant, beautiful solutions that work. They die because they can't figure out who pays for it. Yeah. And so my advice for anybody doing something novel in this space would be to like be relentless in thinking about that, to really make sure that you're consistently checking in with your prospective customers and stakeholders to understand the value prop, the value transfer, and you know what type of value you have permission to extract and from whom, and to have quite a bit of confidence in that before you go too far down this path.
Yeah, that definitely resonates. Well, thank you so much, Matt, for your time, for all of your insights. And I'm sure many people will be interested in looking more into the Techstars program after this podcast. But just for people who might be interested in applying, when is the next cohort starting? And what is that timeline?
Yeah, so we have an application window open right now. If you type in Techstars UHC will be the first link that you'll find. There's an application page on F6S that you can go in. We're accepting applications from now until the 12th of May. So whatever that is, 6 weeks or so, where that window is open. And then we'll pick our 10 companies this summer. And the next class will begin the beginning of September. So starting in the fall, and we'll have 10 digital health startups who join us for that'll be our third year in the program.
Great. Well, this is perfect timing. We'll get the word out.
Awesome. Yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, there has never been a better time than now to be a healthcare entrepreneur. So I'm grateful for the conversation and for your time. Apply.
Wonderful. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.